A very good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining. Tonight's session, which is the second in our series, is going to focus on Shabbos and the Shabbos use of the shul kitchen. Certainly is one of the most frequent, and I think that even in the home setting, the Shabbos laws of a kitchen are fairly relevant in terms of their nuance and people wondering exactly what policy and what sheet that we ought to be following. There are lots of English books and articles out nowadays, but I think the challenge that many of us have is, okay, after I heard everybody's opinion and everybody's minig and everybody's psak, what is a reasonable approach that I should go and implement and consider myself fairly mainstream, normative in what's going on? So for this session, I chose, as was noted, to go fully English instead of lots of background and arguments and opinions. We're trying to be practical. I'll try orally to give some of the background so that we appreciate where this is coming from. We use an expression in davening on Friday night, Am Medushne Oneg, a nation saturated with joy, with happiness, on Shabbos. And to a great extent, that oneg is coming from the kitchen. It's coming from the joy of a festive meal. And many of the halachas that we have regarding Shabbos in terms of detail are going to pertain to the kitchen and particularly to the malacha of bishul. Obviously, we end up going in a lot of other directions as well. There's borer, there's tochein, there's opening packages. There are lots of things, but a lot of it has to do with the heating elements in the kitchen. So the outline that we're going to work with is originally based on one of the Star Kei Rabbanim's putting together a protocol for his own kitchen, the shul kitchen. I spent quite a bit of time adapting it, both from an editing point of view to simplify it and also to adapt it to the needs of our kitchen. But I do want to mention, by way of Hakaras HaTov, Reb David Heber, who has a shul in Baltimore, and he's with the Star K, and this formula that he created is basically the one they borrow in the Star K network whenever they try to set up shul protocol in a shul. Kashrus protocol in a shul. So let's begin with my introductory paragraph, which was really added for our kitchen. If anyone doesn't have a handout yet, please pick one up on the way in. I think one of the great challenges that was shared with me when I joined the shul is that a lot of people wonder if the kitchen is truly under control, and that has to do with whether it's locked when it's supposed to be locked, and I guess open when it's supposed to be open, but locked when it's supposed to be locked. You have, besides the front door of basic access, there's also a back loading dock door, and part of what we're trying to do in creating a secure environment is to make sure that the kitchen is indeed locked when it's supposed to be locked on all doors, and also that if someone goes in to the shul kitchen, if it's weekday, they should be signing in, particularly anybody who's dropping off things for Shabbos use. It's still before Shabbos, there's an opportunity to sign in on the sheet that's there. I believe right now it's on the fridge, to sign in and to mark down what it is that you brought in. So if one person brings in the pastries and a different person brings in chicken cutlets for a Shabbaton, and a different person is bringing in whatever, to sign it in. Part of the brilliance of the way a good shul works is that everybody's pitching in, and indeed, there are many cooks, and they don't spoil the broth. But someone's got to be in charge. Someone's got to be able to glance at that intake sheet and know, okay, so so-and-so was responsible for that, and so-and-so was responsible for that. If there are any questions, we'll go back to them. A practical example, we just had a simcha not long ago where food was cooked in Rebbetzin Winter's kitchen, and that's one of the items that's authorized. It makes it easier for people who are making simchas. They don't have to buy everything. We, as a shul, don't accept things coming in from private homes, but we make an accommodation for the rabbi's wife. It makes it easier for people if they cook in at least a private kitchen. So quite a bit was cooked in her kitchen. I asked her, you know, on the way in though, the new protocol, the way we're doing it, just itemize for me. Tell me how many trays of 9x14 trays we should be expecting to be in the fridge that you know about. Because you're an authorized mashgiach. If you can tell me what I should expect here, then if I need to, I'll pick up the phone and make a phone call. But very often, the paper trail, especially in Hashgacha, is very powerful. You take one glance, you see it matches, and you know that you have what you're supposed to have. And then the person who's going to be mashgiach on the event knows that what's coming out of that fridge was brought in with authorization, and everything moves smoothly. Another comment about mashgichim. So the goal, of course, is that we would have a team of authorized mashgichim who basically know the basic protocol of what the process is. In addition to that middle-of-the-road mainstream mashgiach, there are two other extremes. One extreme is going to be someone who's far more trained. For example, a regular mashgiach does not have to know how to check strawberries. We have a workaround. We just don't use strawberries. In shuls across the United States, the vast majority of shuls simply don't use anything that's labor intensive in any way. And a regular mashgiach does not have to know whatever the shul protocol, a star K, the OU protocol. You don't need to know it to be a mashgiach. You need to be able to do intake. You need to know how the burners work on Shabbos. You don't need to know everything. But a higher level of mashgiach certification would be, I've been trained to check vegetables, fruits. And that's a higher level of certification. Also, keep in mind, there's a lower level. I wouldn't call it certification. I would call it authorization. Sometimes a person who's really not trained, didn't attend seminars, doesn't have certification of any type, but they are a Yehudi Ne'eman. They're a trustworthy Jew, member of the community, someone we can rely on. And it could be that for certain things, the rabbi will authorize them to fill in on a missing link that's needed. If we need a delivery of pizza, of pastries, of some meat delivery from someplace, the rabbi may authorize and say, listen, they weren't trained in the kitchen, etc., but they're a trustworthy person, and case-by-case authorization, we can say that person is authorized to do such and such during this event. Likewise, to alleviate sometimes a little bit of the scheduling and the tension, I have on occasion had a mashkiach over here, man or woman, during the event. And then when it started getting very clear that we're dealing with a stable environment, I authorized somebody else, based on my authorization, to lock up, to stay there the last 45 minutes and see to it that what's finishing up, put away, etc., is done properly and that the door is locked when we're done. So we're looking, really, ideally, that everybody that's being used should fit into that middle category, that they've been trained, they've taken a test of some sort, they've attended enough classes that we're comfortable, etc., and they should be authorized. They should be on a list. But there will be cases, and I hope no one will be unduly surprised, that if in good judgment it will alleviate some stress on different people, it hits 10:30, 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, and the authorized mashkiach wants to leave, there may be the possibility of a reliable person, on my say-so, being told, watch for XYZ, and when it's done, lock up. Let's take a look at the paragraph of preface. The kitchen must be locked when not in use. Keys or the lock box combination will be provided for authorized mashkichim. Anyone entrusted with the key or combination may not entrust the key or combination to anyone else without the rabbi or kashrus coordinator's approval. If the door needs to be opened for an authorized use, an authorized key holder should personally go and open the kitchen. I think that one of the situations that we kind of sunk into, and that for everyone's confidence we got to pull ourselves out of, is the free-for-all attitude regarding the kitchen. And the mashkiach has the right to throw anybody out of the kitchen that they don't want there. And to begin with, the doors should not simply be open just because. There's a reason. One tip about being a mashkiach, because I hope that if you're here, you're looking to get your certification. One tip about being a mashkiach is that to be an effective mashkiach, you need to flex your muscles. You have to find something in the kitchen to comment about. That doesn't mean you forbid everything. Doesn't mean you forbid anything. But you find something by way of authority to comment about. I don't care who you're certifying. You could be certifying another member of the congregation, but the policy is that the person who's the Baal Simcha, who's doing the cooking for themselves, still needs another person of the community who's authorized as a mashkiach, either because of checks and balances or because of know-how. But there's another person there, and that other person who's termed, who's wearing the mashkiach hat in that application, should flex their muscles. You could either find something that's being done wrong. If it's wrong, you comment on it. Hopefully, you won't find anything wrong because everybody's doing everything perfectly right. You will find something to comment about, such as, thank you for making sure that the milchik counter was changed properly before you started working. Thank you for keeping track that even the pot holders were keeping track to use the milchiks or the fleishiks as appropriate. Did you check the cleanliness of the oven before you started? There are on occasion that we use the same oven, milchiks, fleishiks, but it's double wrapped on items that don't leak, etc. There may be exceptions to the typical rule, and we want people to be paying attention. I would like, by the way, to move away from that. We should get
set of milchik ovens instead of using the same ovens, and however our calculations are, but the way it's structured right now, it does require people pay attention, and it does require that a mashgiach flex their muscles and make it clear that they are in charge. I'm told we're having a lot of interaction right now with the Star K. The Star K RC sitting in the office make a tremendous impact in the level of national kashrus. Because if they get a printout of all the inspections, etc., that happen nationwide, and they make no comment, then the mashgiach in the field doesn't know if anyone's paying attention. And if they notice some inconsistency, I see you didn't sign in till 7 o'clock in the morning. Usually you're there at 5. What happened? You've flexed your muscles, and the person out there knows you're paying attention. And as a result, they pay attention. And that's the same in the interaction between the mashgiach and the person who's doing the cooking, the food prep, whatever it is. Again, I think it's obvious, but it bears repetition. There are times that an authorized mashgiach is going to be the person cooking and is not going to be the authorized mashgiach. And they are going to be answerable to the authorized mashgiach. And that's the structure. There are times that I've had, particularly with the boys, our legendary boys, who act as waiters and sometimes act as mashgichim as necessary, at least for the fill-ins, sometimes under certain circumstances. And there are times that I have to say, yes, Thursday night at 11 o'clock, I asked you to be a mashgiach to finish up and lock up. But tonight, Matzai Shabbos, you're a waiter, you're a coordinator, you're not a mashgiach. You can't wear those both hats at the same time. There has to be checks and balances. And therefore, the same person who was a mashgiach Thursday night is now answerable to the mashgiach, whoever that may be, man or woman, on Matzei Shabbos, because the dynamic of the event is different. Before Shabbos, and we have three sections for tonight's session, before Shabbos, on Shabbos, and basically after Shabbos or after the events. Do you have any questions? Am I too technical?
One question.
And
when we talked about strawberries, people want to know, what about frozen strawberries?
Okay, so we're going to discuss, in terms of intake, there's going to be a protocol. Frozen strawberries, certainly if they're coming with the certification, are fine. Star K certifies frozen strawberries. There is another dimension which I want to clarify that it's always true, but it seems that frozen strawberries are far less prone to be infested. And there seem to be a lot of leniency on regular, non-certified frozen strawberries, but I am not ready to put that in writing until it's really clarified. My caution on this is classic. There are many times that in the industry, people will tell you, well, right now, this item is not a problem. And they forget to tell you when it changes. And therefore, the general default position is that we want things coming into the kitchen to be certified. It is enormously hard when you're running a shul kitchen and you're getting different mashgichim to fill in at different times to really keep on top of what the latest nuance of change on every item is. You want to create a protocol that more or less runs itself.
So
there is a difference, and I'm hoping we'll do at least one session about vegetables, because even if we're not authorized to check, we have to understand basically, and certainly for the home setting, basically what it is that we're looking for, and at least why is it challenging, and hopefully we'll give some guidance as to how we can handle an item like frozen strawberries, at least a minimal washing, to make it work. Okay. Before Shabbos, and you'll see the pattern basically which Rabbi Heber used, is supposed to be more or less across the board, like a sweeping, easy policy. If we botch up, so you ask a shayla, and very often we can work things out, but all cans and bottle caps should be opened before Shabbos. General policy is that there's a concern, according to different opinions, that opening an item on Shabbos could be makiv patish, could be it's making a keli. Even if we go the lenient route where it's not making a keli, nevertheless, we're really not supposed to be opening things on Shabbos if it could be easily avoided. Not supposed to tear, even destructively, if it could be easily avoided. As a general policy, everything should be opened before Shabbos. Personally, the way we paskin is that if a soda bottle was not opened before Shabbos and it's needed, provided that you're not tearing imprinted letters, you are allowed to open it on Shabbos, but again, we try to avoid it. There are shittas that literally hold that it's makiv patish, and they hold you're not allowed to do it. Some people are nervous by soda bottles that if they open it, it's going to lose its fizz. The boys, our in-house waitering staff, have devised methods of breaking the seal by putting pressure on the seal, and they don't even open it. They just break the seal and they don't open it, which is great. You don't lose your fizz. So you can be creative, but ultimately we do want the seals to be broken before Shabbos as a lechatchila, as a general policy. Question.
So, when you say things like, if it's needed,
yeah,
what do you mean? Like, it's soda. No one needs it. So, like, how does that work?
And,
like,
that's a good question. I'm not sure why we bought it in the first place.
Like, no, I never understand, but, like, it's different. Like, well, this medicine, if you need it, you should open it, you know? But, like, how does that play into,
if you have a simcha, I guess.
If you're running a simcha and you wanted to be able to put drinks on the table, and now you're going to be nebuch stuck with water.
So if you want.
Or you could have...
No, so that's part of the shayla.
And have four bottles. You need to open two more, I guess.
No, that's correct. That's part of the shayla. I consider that a legitimate shayla. But it should be... We have a style in psak, generally, that when we don't want it to become the norm, we require that it be asked as a shayla.
That's, need means something a little bit different, though, than... Like,
need is not going to be exactly the same, right, for a medical need, or, a soda need. It's not the same thing. That's correct. Correct. Yeah.
So the Rav saying if the bottles had not been opened, we should ask a shayla to you, or we shouldn't open them, and we should not put them out?
There should be a little bit of resistance. It was not done correctly.
Past Shabbos, I don't think the bottles were opened. So we shouldn't have put them out? Or we should?
They're supposed to be opened before Shabbos. We need somebody authorized to do a walkthrough in the kitchen before Shabbos. That's what Hashgacha is.
If they weren't open, does the Rav say that we could take a knife and put it through the top so that...
There are different tricks. I don't want to get into a whole, right? I mean, this is... The tricks are worth a whole shear. But the topic over here is that the bottle cap is being made into a keli, into a vessel, into a usable item. Until now it was affixed, now it's been removed and it can go on to another bottle, onto this bottle. It became a usable, useful item. So some people purposely lift the tabs a little bit and get it off the container without breaking the tab. Mm-hmm. Other people use a sharp implement and they're mazik the top. And like this, when they're opening it, they're opening a thing that's no longer a keli because it's been damaged. I don't require it after the fact. But there are poskim who hold that you're absolutely not allowed to do it. And therefore, we have to create a situation where the normative way of dealing with it in shul is that it's done before Shabbos. Will I be matter it? Yes, I hold you're allowed to do it. The poskim I rely on hold you're allowed to do it. But that's not the way, it's not correct. Everyone agrees that all containers are supposed to be opened before Shabbos in deference to some very big poskim who hold that you're absolutely not allowed to do it on Shabbos. And you don't do something that smacks right in the face, you know, purposely. So we're looking to create a normative approach where there's a walkthrough before Shabbos, and this is part of flexing your muscles. Again, I hope a mashgiach never finds pork in a kosher kitchen. We're not looking for that. But if you flex your muscles on, oh, I see the bottles were opened, or they were not opened, let's take care of this. You've proclaimed your authority, you've shown that you're paying attention, and that's how hashgacha dynamic works. Yeah.
I think you said everything should be open before Shabbos. So we're not just talking about bottles and cans, but bags and boxes too, right?
Bags, boxes, particularly plates, napkins, cups, anything that's in a package that's sealed should be opened before Shabbos.
Okay, and is there anything that you said that if you find whatever need means, if you have a need to open something, you said that any of those things we can open on Shabbos then if there's a need to turn?
I am in my current understanding of it, a shayla should be asked. It should not be, there should be a reluctance.
The mashgiach shouldn't open anything without first asking the shayla if it can be opened.
Correct. Unless the mashgiach is on a level that we've already authored. Yeah, that type of thing. But I don't think I would do that.
Is there anything that can be that cannot be opened on Shabbos if it's not open before in this kind of situation?
Absolutely not. Yeah, sometimes you're actually making a keli, and it really is a keli, and you really can't do it. Yes. There are those who hold like an orange juice, the way they come now with a pull top, or the old method where you're actually creating a spout. It's a significant topic. You look at any of the contemporary works, and they got a few pages on this. So I'm not looking to harp on... I'm looking to create a protocol that we don't walk there. The stuff should be open. It would be normal for a mashgiach to reach in, open an orange juice container, and look, was the pull tab pulled off? It was supposed to have been pulled off by whoever's running the event. It should have been pulled off. Exceptions. So I've done some research on what's normative regarding box drinks. And it seems that it is normative to allow box drinks to be opened on Shabbos. They can't be opened beforehand. It would ruin the product. It would spill all over. It's not conducive. And all you're doing is piercing it with a simple hole of no significance, no reusability, in order to be able to access the product. So that seems to be normative, and I'm willing to go with that. Likewise, opening freeze pops, I did some research, and it seems to be normative in across the board. It seems to be normative to allow it, so that's the direction we're going. But generally, items should be opened before Shabbos.
What kind of freeze pops are you referring to?
The 2.5 cent freeze pops.
So you can't open that.
You could.
But then you can use that as a plate, though, or you just have to take the whole thing out.
So this is, I always was reluctant, but I asked around, and it seems to be that just in order to use it, to get it out, you're allowed to do it.
What about using a shiwan?
That doesn't, it's nice in lumdus, but I don't really see the applicability of it. Either we're doing it, we're not doing it, I don't see the point of going there right now. Right now, protocol is we do it before Shabbos.
What about foods that are all attached with preparations that should have been torn before Shabbos? Like those would be
the freeze pops.
The freeze pops come like that sometimes. Like,
so,
ask a question.
Yeah, I would like that things be addressed. Freeze pops, they should have been torn before Shabbos. If we have a question, we'll deal with it. I'm looking in sweeping terms to appreciate what direction we're looking to go. Yeah.
Soda cans that comes under...
Soda cans as normative psak should not be opened on Shabbos. If a specific person opens them, there are shittas that hold it's fine, but as a normative psak, we don't open soda cans on Shabbos. The shul should not be serving Shalosh Shudas, six packs of cans, expecting people to open them on Shabbos. Again, if an individual does that, there are Rabbanim hold that's fine, but it's not the normative. It's not the general way the Hashgacha world approves things. So it should not be served like that at a shul event. Yeah.
It's more like for personal use. If you have soy milk bottle with foil on top, kind of similar to the. Can you
So again, we're recommending that one try to do it before Shabbos, but that is considerably better than some of the other cases. It's more like a box drink where the keli was totally there and the foil was just to seal it, and it's permitted. You're allowed to do that. Yeah.
I know that the chips should be open before Shabbos, but if they're not, can you just take out everything from the bag and just throw away the bag?
So, that's correct, but there's a discussion of the correct way of opening it, and even so, it's probably better than opening it by the pull tabs to open it with a knife and making sure not to hit the letters, but to open it a little bit on the side. Make a declaration. That seems to be a big thing. Make a declaration that you're not going to reuse it, and then open it.
If people are concerned that opening these things could open us up to other problems like bugs, etc., whatever, so we can obtain, they have different types of clips and different things that we could seal items after they've been opened. But again, I could really say that comfortably and strongly that the norm in the kashrus industry is that things are opened before Shabbos. B. All heating equipment, ovens, stoves, hot boxes, warmers, crock pots, coffee urns, anything that's being used on Shabbos have to be lit, started, plugged in by an observant Jew prior to Shabbos. And that is something the Mashgiach is going to want to check on. Make sure that lights are turned on before Shabbos. A non-Jew is not allowed to turn on ovens or crock pots at any time, before Shabbos, during Shabbos. We don't use non-Jews to ignite things in the kitchen setting. This is also very, very far-reaching and accepted in the kashrus world. We are very concerned about Bishul Akum, to the point that the policy in all food industry is that we do not allow non-Jews to light ovens or sternos or anything, even if we, in our brilliance, know that it has nothing to do with Bishul Akum. I was once serving as a mashgiach on a particular event that
as is typical, everything was totally, totally cooked in the commissary. And what was being brought out and was being certified and what we had to pay attention to was big trays of totally cooked food. But it was clear, and even the owner kept reminding everybody, the rabbi lights the sternums. The rabbi lights the sternums. And like this, the goyim are trained that they do not handle the igniters, they don't handle the matches, and this saves us on other events, or our event, that we don't go there. The non-Jews do not light fires in a kosher setting. Yeah?
I remember on Mishkeach in the kitchen, and the Baal Simcha was Jewish, but the Mishkeach has to turn the stove on also. There wasn't an issue of whether the person there was a Gentile or not. Isn't it the Mishkeach's responsibility to turn on the flame no matter what?
That's the way we created the policy as a national Jewish position. That's the way it's because we're assuming that the Mashgiach is the one person who in all settings, regardless of who your caterer is and who your Baal Simcha is and who the chef is and who's filling in, no matter what, we assume that the Mashgiach is a reliable Shomer Shabbos, otherwise it wouldn't be Mashgiach. So yes, we do not turn to a proprietor unless the Hashgacha specifically authorized the proprietor. You will find, on a sophisticated level, in certain settings, that yes, it could be that if you have a Frum Shomer Shabbos, that they may allow him to light his own fires. Could be. But we wouldn't be going in that direction in any kashrus setting that changes. Any kashrus setting, you're dealing with hotel kashrus, you're dealing with shul kashrus, you're dealing with anything, you do not want the non-Jewish workers of the caterer to feel that they could just flip on the flame. And what our point is that plugging in an electrical appliance is the equivalent of turning on the flame. C, getting a little bit closer into Shabbos issues. Stovetops must be covered with a sheet of metal, the blech. All controlling knobs, switches, dials of heating equipment has to be covered. This is a classic issue in modern halacha. It used to be that the way you would adjust a fire is by stoking the coals or adding fuel to the coals. Everything was where the fire was. Nowadays, no one adjusts the fire where the fire is. You ever go to your gas burner and add, you know, a little firewood to make it better? You adjust it from the knob. So la halacha, what has to be covered? So the halacha requires nowadays that we cover both. One is because that's where it would be adjusted if we were to adjust it, and the other is the place where you make your declaration that we are no longer cooking. We've covered it over, we've made it appear that cooking will not occur, so that whatever we're doing never appears as cooking. Just to use the Hebrew words, we should appreciate where this is coming from. There's a restriction on shehiyah, which means to leave an item on a fire without a blech. And the requirement in that case for the blech is shema yechate. Maybe you will come to adjust the fire and try to make the item cook faster. In which case, there's no question, not only do you want to cover the fire, but if the concern is shema yechate, maybe you'll make it burn faster, you want to cover the knob or take the knob off so that it can't easily be adjusted. Put a piece of tape over it, whatever solution we come up with. Some people just dump a clump of tinfoil over it. But there's some method in which we declare that it's off limits. The other issue, which is probably more familiar to people, is called chazora, which is that you're not allowed to take an item off the fire and return it unless there was a blech there. So that as you're returning it, it's clear that you're not putting something up to cook. You're returning something to the flame where it was. There are obviously other requirements, such as you intended to put it back, such as that you were still holding it and you didn't put it down. But the idea that we're dealing with right now in Shabbos preparation is there has to be a blech there, some sort of blech that demarcates, that makes it clear that we're not cooking and we shouldn't be tempted to do so. Hot plates should be covered with an inverted cookie tin. We have not been doing that here in Shul based on the ruling of a certain popular posek printed in a very popular Shabbos book. But I did some research and it seems to be very clear that standard normative kashrus in the United States is that even hot plates, even though they cannot be adjusted, the ones we buy are non-adjustable hot plates, they should still have a blech. And that is having to do with the fact that we're going to pull stuff out of the fridge Shabbos morning, a kugel, and we're going to put it on the hot plate. There has to be a demarcation that makes it, that we're not putting it on the heating element, we're putting it on the separation. So the best method to do this is with a cookie tin, those thin, large tins, and you invert it. You flip it upside down so that it's separating you like a half an inch from the surface, and your food on a good hot plate will get plenty hot. But it's separated. And if we're worried that the tin starts caving in, you put in a little crumpled tin foil underneath the cookie tin, different spots to be the support, a little bit like those pizza spokes to make sure your pizza doesn't get crushed.
Okay. Crock pots and lining those, is that the same?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not positive how diligent we've been here in Shul on this because, again, there's a little bit of discussion about it, but the normative should be that the crock pot setting is covered, either the knob pulled off or afraid we're going to lose it, just take a handful of tinfoil and cover it, and the inside of the crock pot should be lined with tinfoil that protrudes beyond the sides so that it doesn't just look like we're cleanliness covering or something like that. It should actually protrude beyond the sides, and that would satisfy, you know, what I would consider normative, the basic way that people handle it. There's another thing that's sometimes done with the crock pots, which we are not requiring. Some people purposely put little balls of tinfoil on the bottom so that it doesn't touch the bottom. It's a very in thing, but it's not, I mean, it's a major disagreement among poskim whether it's required, and I don't see the need to impose that.
When you say protrude beyond the sajin,
it should come up. It should come up. It should go beyond barely covering the heating element. It should actually come up.
Fold it over.
Visible?
You can cover it, but it should protrude. It should come out. That's the ideal way. When you have an insert crock pot, if you have a flatbed crock pot, which is basically a hot plate, so then you just put tinfoil over it. And again, it should protrude. It should protrude over the sides, and it's nice and easy if it protrudes over the front, then you just flip it down and it covers the controls. Okay, note. The only case that we would use ovens regarding Shabbos is either if the ovens were kept on until candle lighting time, and shut at candle lighting time, so then you could leave chicken kugel in there for Friday night meal, and it really does widen your opportunities of keeping things nice and warm. but the oven is off, so that an hour later when you're serving it, you're not dealing with an oven that's on and you're opening an oven that's on. You're dealing with an oven that's off, and that changes the whole picture. Or there may be an exception. I mentioned sometimes if you have non-Jewish staff, if you're dealing with a sheva brachos, a bar mitzvah, you're dealing with something that's being catered and you have non-Jewish staff, it might be possible if you're relying on the non-Jewish staff to open the oven, it might be a little bit different. You could possibly be more lenient, and then a shaila should be asked, and if the rav is willing under those circumstances to take responsibility for it, it could be that it's authorized. But it has to be by a shaila, and it has to be that the rav is confident that the system that's working in that kitchen for that Shabbos with that staff precludes any problems happening, and then it could theoretically be done. For safety, make sure that the wires of a hot plate never touch the hot plate. That seems to be the one complaint that people have when they switch to a hot plate. You could short the wires. Those things get very hot. The wire insulation melts, and you could have a problem. So even go so far as make a hook on the wall, if necessary, to hook the wire in and make sure it never touches. D. All liquids or food containing liquid should be pre-cooked and hot, full boil. I believe that's Rabbi Heber's words. Full boil before Shabbos, so that we're dealing with something that is ein bishel achar bishel. It's been totally cooked. And it just changes your whole positioning, that if accidentally something was moved, you're not doing cooking on Shabbos. A classic, which is really the most scary, you have a case where on the blech, you have soup to be served Friday night, and you have a chulent to be served Shabbos day. You leave on one fire, you leave the chulent off to the side a little bit, where it's still hot, and it's still going to cook, but it's not in the piping hot spot, because you want your chicken soup piping hot. It sounds okay, until you realize that when you take off the chicken soup, you're going to move the chulent onto the hot location. If that chulent was absolutely fully cooked, totally, 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 not just edible, but totally, totally cooked, so then you're good. You're allowed to move things from extremely warm, bordering on hot, to piping hot. You're allowed to take, for example, your kettle for tea, for dessert, and have it a little bit more peripheral, as long as it's still hot enough to be called a hot drink. As long as it was boiled, truly boiled before Shabbos, and now it's off to the side a little bit, so then when you have better room, the soup comes off, you move that to a piping hot spot, you're allowed to go from very warm hot to piping hot on Shabbos, as long as it always stayed that extremely warm level. But if it never got hot, and it only gets hot now on Shabbos because you've moved it to the hot location, that is straightforward, prohibited bishul cooking on Shabbos. And you could find regular salad from homes where they don't realize this. And the corrective measure is that we teach people everything should be totally cooked before Shabbos. And if it is totally cooked before Shabbos, you avoid these types of mishaps. But again, you can have a big chulent. It wasn't absolutely totally cooked before Shabbos. The person who moves it to the hotter location on Friday night was in violation of bishul. Not a pretty place to be.
Another item that's mentioned is that if an urn, I forgot to check if our urns, I don't think so. Some urns have an outer tube. Depending on how they work, this one has it? Ah, Mrs. Sadler, show and tell. Yes. This tube, depending on how it works, may have water in it that never boiled. You fill it up. As you fill it up, the water rises because it finds its happy medium. This water may never, it's possible, depending on how it works, may never have boiled. The recommendation is to empty one cup out of it before Shabbos as part of your Shabbos preparations. That causes the water to circulate a little bit and seems to solve your problem. But otherwise, what you're doing on Shabbos is you're letting in that water with that water, and you're cooking it. Again, let out one cup of water before Shabbos, and that seems to allow the circulation to cause everything to get hot.
You say depending on how it works. Do you know anything about the pump pot?
I don't think it has that type of tube.
It has a tube.
It has a
but it's on the inside. It's insulated.
Right, that's what I'm wondering.
But it's separate from the rest. It's all internal.
I think it's all internal. I'll tell you honestly, we make T-Sense, the essence, the concentrate, before Shabbos. And I think many, many people do. If you make it from this thing, by definition, you're doing one cup before Shabbos. It's just a part of the Shabbos routine. You put your tea bags into a cup. Once this is boiled, you take one cup and make your tea concentrate, and you've done it. So it really it could be part of a routine. My impression, I never heard the complaint on the pump method, but again, I don't see it as such a big, you know, difficulty to accommodate. E, if ice will be used, ice tube trays should be done before Shabbos. They should be in the freezer. We should not be making ice cubes on Shabbos. The issue here is obviously not cooking, but rather molded, creating something new, changing the form of something. And lechatchila, that's the way to do it, to have everything in place before Shabbos. F, all fruit should be peeled and cut before Shabbos. Any designs on the fruit trays should be prepared before Shabbos. If a person were to be doing this on Shabbos, you run into a number of things where you just have to be a little bit knowledgeable, and we want to avoid mistakes, and a lot of people in volunteering to make fruit platters are not aware, they don't realize, but a classic is that as you're pulling things out of the basket, you start choosing the healthy and robust ones from the ones that are not so good. If you're making this tray hours before the meal, if you have a team that's putting this together Friday night for Shabbos Kiddush, or Shabbos morning for Kiddush that's going to be after Musaf, and you're already doing your preparation before davening. So all of that type of activity could very well fall into the category of Borer, even if you're not selecting the bad, even if you're selecting the good, but you're not doing it miyad le'echol. You're not doing it right away in order to eat, right? The classic Borer that's permitted is you choose the one you want, Ochel mitocha psolas, with your hand, and you bring it directly to your mouth to eat it. So we know it doesn't have to be directly to your mouth. If it's a half hour before the meal, and the woman of the house, for example, is preparing the platter so that people can eat it, that's acceptable, as long as she's taking the good from the bad. But if you start taking the bad from the good, or you start doing it hours before, it's a case of borer. Again, not everyone is an expert at this. You don't always think of all the nuances. We recommend that on a communal level,
platters should be done beforehand. You cut saran wrap before Shabbos. You seal it up. That's what the caterers do. There's no reason that we shouldn't be able to do it in a way that it stays fresh. And it's anyway, people are very thankful that they don't have to work so hard on Shabbos to try to produce everything. G. Make sure the Eruv is up. And if that's not in your power, be aware. If it's not, you got to have everything on site. H. Jewish waiters for Shabbos jobs have to do something before Shabbos or after Shabbos so that there's havlo, so that we're paying them for the entire project and not for Shabbos work. Let's move over to the next side. And again, I'm going to try to move a little bit faster here. Once we have the basic attitudes, and certainly if there are questions, either now or in the future, we can spend time on them. On Shabbos, nothing should be placed on or in a stove on Shabbos, even by a non-Jew. You can't ask a non-Jew to do it. There may be certain cases, but it's pretty far-fetched. Basically, we want to make sure that the blech is in place, and if necessary, a double warmer, a pot underneath. For example, you could put something on top of the chillin pot if it's dry, fully cooked food. Vegetable peelers may not be used on Shabbos. On Shabbos, slotted spoons, colanders should not be used with food containing liquid. Slotted spoons should not be used with ice. Again, some of these things you may find depend on circumstances, but sometimes these are just sweeping rules so that on a communal level, we know that no one's going to slip. Yeah.
I would like to take a Kiddush preparation and ask a couple of questions, if I may.
So we're already nearing 9:15. I would be glad to devote an entire session if you could write up the questions or discuss with me. I'll be glad to do a full session.
Okay.
But right now I just want to finish this sheet and know that we're covered on these topics. G. No deliveries may be made to or from the event site by the caterer on Shabbos. I believe that includes even with a non-Jewish driver. We're just not going there. We're not having a caterer start pulling his dishes. Besides kashrus, it's Shabbos, there's too much. That's not the way we do business. On Shabbos, everything was already on site, and everything that's on site remains on site until after Shabbos. H. Items should not be turned on or off by a non-Jew on Shabbos. I've been at events where I walked by, there were four hot plates lined up for a Kiddush. I walked by, I saw one of the plugs had fallen out. I said, you know, I hope we can make it on three hot plates. I came back 10 minutes later on my next walkthrough, and the plug was back in. I hope it wasn't plugged in by a Jew, but even a non-Jew doing that is not acceptable. After the meal on Shabbos, only dishes whose type will be used on that Shabbos may be washed. So Friday night for Shabbos day, but otherwise we don't do hachana. Dishes Shabbos afternoon, just because we're around doing nothing and we don't want to come back Matzei Shabbos, that's not a good enough reason to wash dishes on Shabbos. There are reasons to allow washing dishes on Shabbos. I will give you the tip, but you should ask a shayla. You should not just be doing it on a shul level without asking. One is if you're dealing with bug issues, so then there's a Shabbos need. to wash them, or at least rinse them to the point that you're not going to be attracting bugs. It's a Shabbos need. The other thing is that sometimes a chillin pot, for example, if you can get water into it in the near future, it won't cake up and it won't be so difficult to wash on Matzei Shabbos. Common practice is that we put it into the sink, whichever sink we're keeping track, whatever sink is appropriate, and we make a little bit of a haroma, a little bit of a semi-trick. You turn the water on to wash your hands, and you just leave it on until the cholent pot is filled. As long as you're doing it while it's fresh, you're not changing the status of the pot, you're not washing the pot, you're just making sure that it does not deteriorate further. And common practice is to do it with haroma, not to do it straight away. But to do it with, yeah, I turned it on to wash my hands and I left it on, and that works. Following a kiddush or a meal, you're allowed to clean up if the area needs to be used. And that's how it is in a multi-purpose area. It needs to be cleaned up, and that's fine. Finally, item C, preparations for Matzei Shabbos affairs may not begin until the end of Shabbos. For our shul, it's printed on the sap. The end of Shabbos, this includes setting up tables. Now, I'm well aware that if you're a good lamdan, you could come up with reasons as to how many minutes after shkia on an item that is not really prohibited midda oraisa, but on a shul level, we don't go there. This is common practice. I believe in all hashkachas, or certainly the mainstream hashkachas, there's a time, whether that time in some organizations is 72 minutes. I mean, we print on the sap 50 minutes, so that's fine. But whatever the minig of the shul is, that's the cutoff, and we don't get more brainy than the system, because then the system deteriorates. So even though setting up tables, for example, or folding napkins by the non-Jewish staff, you know, like in the Beis Medrash, you might be able to figure out justification for it. But on the practical level, that's the theme that we work with. Policy, structure, smooth moving way that things operate, and Be'ezras Hashem, are smooth and enjoyable. I thank you all for joining. I'll be glad to stay for questions. If you have something that you'd like me to cover in a future session, please either contact me or drop me an email, and I'll be glad to make the effort to include it in the future.
This is a question about normal Shabbos.